Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
So we're talking about things like depression and ADHD and anxiety disorders. You might not have that, but we know that the average American has about 2 or 3 days of feeling down, depressed, or blue every month.
Dr. Drew Ramsey says diet can help reduce the intensity of those down spells. He speaks with us about brain-healthy foods. Turnips, fresh from Chef Daniel Orr's family farm in our first recipe. Then we get trendy with kale chips and hydroponic growing. Amy Mayer introduces us to the superweed of the moment, Palmer amaranth, and how climate change is impacting chili peppers. Luann Johnson starts off our food news with another food safety scandal in China.
Fast food in China was sent reeling after a television news report exposed meat suppliers mixing fresh meat with expired meat and picking up meat off the floor, all while processing goods for Chinese McDonald's and KFC restaurants. Dragon TV aired the report Sunday, and both brands have since publicly apologized to customers. Supplier Shanghai Huxi Food Company, owned by the OSI Group out of Aurora, Illinois, has been shuttered during the investigation. McDonald's and Yum Brands, parent company of KFC, have said they will stop partnering with the supplier. Shanghai Huxi also supplied many big-name chains in Japan, like Starbucks and Burger King, in addition to McDonald's and KFC. A Tokyo-based spokesperson for McDonald's confirmed that 1/5 of their chicken nuggets came from Shanghai Huxi, while Starbucks outlets confirmed they had previously sold chicken supplied by the company. The head of the Environmental Protection Agency is touring farm country, trying to assure farmers that the agency isn't asking for more authority over farmers' and ranchers' lands. Harvest Public Media's Christopher Husted reports.
The EPA wants to clarify a portion of the Clean Water Act to give the agency more control over millions of acres of wetlands and streams. But powerful agriculture groups like the American Farm Bureau oppose the proposal. They contend that it would allow the agency to dictate how farmers use certain bodies of water on their farmland. At a farm in central Missouri, EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy maintained the rule change isn't meant to burden farmers, but to protect downstream waters.
This has been characterized as the largest land grab ever in the United States. You know, we're not regulating land. We're simply trying to protect drinking water, knowing that that's important for agriculture.
Many farm interests are putting pressure on lawmakers to work against the proposal. The public comment period for the rule closes October 20th. Christopher Husted, Harvest Public Media.
And the number of pigs in a northern Indiana county more than tripled from 2007 to 2012. The result is claims of, quote, noxious fumes and odors discharged from and sensed beyond the boundaries of their property, unquote. 4 nuisance lawsuits were brought by neighbors of the industrial hog farms in Randolph County, which are all operated by North Carolina-based Maxwell Foods. But this week, Special Judge Marianne Voorhees of Delaware Circuit Court 1 ruled in favor of the pork producers, saying the plaintiffs did not present evidence that the odors were caused by negligence on the part of the farms. North Carolina shipped more than 800,000 pigs to Indiana in 2012. According to the Star Press, that move was partly because North Carolina does not produce enough corn to feed its livestock industry, but also because construction of big hog farms in the state has been banned. Links to read more about these stories are on our website in this week's podcast post. Find them at eartheats.org.
We encourage you to join the fun on our social media platforms as well. Come and see what everyone's talking about. We're at Earth Eats. Luann Johnson is the voice of our news every week. Thanks for the work.
Anytime.
These are baby turnips from Kolb Homestead.
Chef Daniel Orr's restaurant in downtown Bloomington, Indiana, is a family affair. The Kolb Homestead is his family's farm down at the Ohio River.
My mom shows up here with truckloads of stuff. I'm like, okay, I guess I know what the specials are this weekend.
He says this has been a bumper year for their harvest. Lots and lots of beautiful veggies, like turnips. Not your favorite? Well, hang tight. Chef Orr is pairing them with some local maple syrup and Bosque pears.
Some people don't like turnips, and they think that they They taste very strong, but when you add some sweet to the turnips, that really, really brings out their natural beauty. And so we're going to do that. What we've done is we've blanched the baby turnips. And blanching just means cooking them in boiling salted water until they're tooth tender, and then shocking them in ice water. So I've got those done. I've got some diced pears. We got the maple syrup, butter, lemon juice to give it a little acidity, and then my sweet seasoned spice blend, which you could also, of course, use Chinese five spice powder. Okay, we've got a hot pan on. We're going to throw our butter in that. Butter's kind of brown and nutty. We call that beurre noisette in French, which means kind of a hazelnut aroma to it. Okay, we've added our turnips. Now I'm going to add the pears, diced pears. You want to use Basque pears for this, not other types of pears. The Basque pear is the crunchy pear, and it's less likely to turn to mush when you cook it. Whereas if you used an Anjou pear or a ripe pear that would just kind of melt away, it wouldn't give you that texture. Okay, what I'm going to do is cook this for 2 to 3 minutes over high heat, and what I'm doing is I want to extract a lot of the moisture out of the pears and the turnips so they start to caramelize. All right, once those have started to caramelize, we're going to add the maple syrup, and I'm using our friend Tim Burton's maple syrup and the lemon juice. Okay, and we're just going to cook that down until everything kind of caramelizes, so those will all come together and everything will get kind of coated in a glaze, and then we'll be good to go.
Turnips turn sweet. Follow this recipe to make it yourself at eartheats.org. The cover of Dr. Drew Ramsey's book, The Happiness Diet, features a juicy hamburger with lots of veggies. He says that patty of grass-fed beef can help improve the health of our brains. What's even better for your brain, he says, than that grass-fed beef is a fillet of wild salmon.
In that wild salmon, you're going to get the omega-3 fats. Lots of people have heard how good those are for heart health. I think what doesn't get out there enough is that your brain is actually made of fat, and probably the most important fat in your brain are the omega-3 fats.
Ramsey is an assistant clinical professor of psychiatry at Columbia University. In his new book, The Happiness Diet, he talks about brain-beneficial foods and how those foods have been pushed out of the modern American diet over time.
That omega-3 fats are probably some of the most prevalent in the planet because that is what plants use to help them make photosynthesis. So our food supply kind of rests on omega-3 fats. As we've switched over to grains and vegetable oils, we've put a whole lot of omega-6 fats in our diet. And it's this ratio of omega-6 to omega-3s. They're these very long, both essential, specialized fats in the body. The ratio traditionally has been 1 to 4, 1 to 3. Now most Americans eat a ratio of about 1 omega-3 fat for every 20 omega-6 fats. And the idea behind this on a molecular level is that, again, increases inflammation and decreases your body ability to use the omega-3 fats. And those have been – those are really headline news, I think. I mean, we use them in psychiatry. There's one trial where omega-3 fats were even equal to Prozac in the treatment of depression. Most recent meta-analysis – I mean, there's like any molecule. It's hard to get a real clear peer data signal. But most recent meta-analysis is very positive that omega-3 fats have a clear role in treating and preventing depression.
So omega-3 fats we can get through animal products.
Yeah. The most omega-3 fats, it's one of these things that confuses people. It starts out as a plant product. There are a couple of algae and phytoplankton that make them. And then they're bioconcentrated in the food supply. So the reason something like salmon is so high in omega-3 fats is that, one, it keeps their cells a little loose and flexible so they can be in that really cold water. That's why it's cold water fatty fish. And that they bioconcentrate from these algae, the omega-3 fats. And there are three types. The omega-3s in plants usually are ALA. It's the shortest. But EPA and DHA, and those are the two that we use in psychiatry, and those are what you'll see on the back of your fish oil pill. Those are really most concentrated in fish and seafood. And there are, again, clear correlations in pathology. And I think what I always want to remind folks is that our moods lie on a spectrum. So we're talking about things like depression and ADHD and anxiety disorders. You might not have that, but we know that, you know, the average American has about 2 or 3 days of feeling down, depressed, or blue every month. And so what you can do with diet, I think, is reduce the intensity of those of how down you get and increase the stability of your mood, that you can decrease kind of excessive worry or anxiety. And you certainly, there's some good data that you can promote your cognitive capacities, your ability to remember over time.
Well, okay, we're talking about cognitive capacities. We're on the campus of Indiana University.
Yes.
So let's focus on foods that, you know, 19 through 23-year-olds can eat to help them study through the day and be focused.
Right. So the first thing that, college students are looking for are stimulants, usually. And that's where we're seeing a lot of these energy drinks. So we want to avoid those kind of things, right? And instead, we want to give you natural foods that are stimulating. And so this is where on a college campus, I think, for example, coffee and dark chocolate, or cacao nibs, which is the sort of raw form of chocolate. Those are great, very stimulating foods for focus. One of the molecules that helps your brain focus is a neurotransmitter called acetylcholine. And choline is a fat-soluble nutrient that is found mainly in eggs. And so I think eggs in the morning are a great way to prepare your brain for learning. You get a variety of B vitamins for not many calories again. An egg is a very low-calorie food. I think that spicy foods sometimes can help people focus, but that's sort of a theory of it. Just, you know, a lot of times what I see is that people want to change their mood state. Right? You're in a bad mood, or you can't focus, or you're feeling groggy in the library. I spent many a day like that. And so foods that kind of shift your state, which would be spicy foods like chili peppers or ginger, I find at least those help me kind of perk up a little bit. And the other thing that I think that, drinks that are great are, you know, green teas and dark teas. And the reason to recommend those over energy drinks is that you're getting all these interesting phytonutrients, things like polyphenol, flavonoid antioxidants, which is just – these are the molecules that are in plants that science is just starting to understand. They're we think about them as antioxidants, but they're actually signaling molecules. They mainly decrease inflammation. And we know that inflammation is underlying a lot of different diseases these days. It's really kind of a buzzword in, medicine. So that's why I'd like to recommend those over something like an energy drink.
I just sort of want you to respond to how I'm interpreting what you're saying. What I'm hearing is be smart, eat with common sense, as you said way back in the beginning. Your diet is not asking people to cut out dairy. It's not asking people to cut out meat entirely like a lot of other diets that are on the market right now. Why did you need to write this book?
I didn't think the message was being put together clearly enough, particularly around brain health. It's true. In some ways, this is a common sense diet. Eat a lot of vegetables. But I felt like we've been telling that to people for the last 30 or 40 years. And vegetable intake isn't increasing as much as it should. I thought there was a lot of confusion around meat. I'm not just saying eat some meat. I'm actually saying you can regularly eat meat, but how you get your meat and the type of meats that you get and ingest is really quite critical. And to be more clear about that, because I see a lot of there are a lot of diets out there based on don't eat this. And I thought it would be much more helpful to encourage people to eat the right foods and to share with them all of the exciting data that's coming out. I mean, it's really been over the last 4 years that there is just a surge of data saying, you know, this isn't just about obesity and diabetes. If you look at some of the most disabling illnesses on the planet, depression, anxiety, dementia, there's a clear, clear data signal that dietary pattern, eating a better, healthier whole foods diet really decreases your risk. So that's where I felt that message wasn't getting through, the message about food and brain health and also tying together the danger of obesity and diabetes over time to the brain, and to really help give people that extra step of motivation to get off the processed foods, get off what we call the MAD diet or the modern American diet.
Dr. Drew Ramsey, speaking about his book, The Happiness Diet. Connect with him at drewramseymd.com. Dr. Ramsey is also the author of the cookbook 50 Shades of Kale. So Daniel Orr picked this recipe just for him.
And you want to leave the pieces fairly big because we're going to be making kale chips today. And they're a great alternative to potato chips. They're very elegant. You can serve them with cocktails.
Kale lovers, stay tuned. Support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, now with 5 locations in Bloomington. Blooming Foods has supported locally produced food and artisanal goods since 1976. BloomingFoods.coop.
Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness Massage and Yoga, 812-337-3529 or 33RELAX. And Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, now with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. I'm Annie Corrigan in the studios of WFIU Bloomington for Earth Eats. Chef Daniel Orr is hard at work in the kitchen.
We've got this beautiful dark purple kale that has this nice kind of almost neon-looking center stem, bright purple. What we're going to do is we're just going to pull the heavy stems out of those and put those to the side. Now, you can put those in your compost. You could chop them up and throw them in a soup. You could braise them with some lentils or something.
Can you pickle them?
These could be pickled, too. Yeah. And lots of fiber in those. All right, so I'm going to pull the purple leaves off here first. Then I've got our more traditional green curly kale. And you want to leave the pieces fairly big because we're going to be making kale chips today. And they're a great alternative to potato chips. They're very elegant. You can serve them with cocktails. You could serve them just with any kind of snacks. And then finally, I've got this real long kind of tongue-shaped kale, if you have a real big tongue. And you could make these just plain with just a little touch of olive oil and put a pinch of salt. You got to be careful with the salt because these are going to cook down and it's easy to oversalt greens. All right, so it's better to undersalt than to oversalt. Add a little bit of fresh ground black pepper, and you could do it as simple as that. I'm going to kick it up a little bit with some curry and a little bit of garlic powder. Okay, and then we just simply kind of massage the oil and seasonings into the kale. All right, so now we just put these in a 250-degree oven. It's a nice slow oven, and you cook them for about 25 to 30 minutes. And the magic of radio.
Ta-da!
They come out like this. Okay, and then for presentation, I like to put them in a rocks glass. And so those nice tall ones kind of stick out of there. Put in a couple of the purple ones for color.
You can hear how crunchy they are.
Oh, yeah, they're super crunchy. They're delicious. I love these things. And a great way to get a little kale into your life.
But wait, kale lovers, some potentially bad news this week. ABC News in Australia reported that one of the world's biggest kale seed suppliers in that country is out of stock. Will the rest of the world feel the no kale pain? Well, we're not sure. Keep an eye on that story for sure. Just in case, check out all the awesome collard greens recipes we have at eartheats.org. Greens on the brain, but this time it's mostly lettuce. Let's talk to a grower who doesn't rely on soil.
Yeah, I'm Deb McKee Kelly, and we're Good Life Farms. We grow hydroponically in heated greenhouses. We've been growing hydroponic for almost 4 years now. We started growing in the field, and then we switched to hydroponics a few years later for efficiency and productivity.
Can you just give me a brief explanation of what hydroponic growing is all about?
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's just growing in water. You're growing with the roots suspended in water that's infused with nutrients from mineral salts.
And this allows you to grow year-round?
Yes, we grow year-round. Well, the heaters in the greenhouse allow us to grow year-round. I mean, anybody could grow year-round if they heated their greenhouses. So.
How many heads of lettuce do you think you'll sell today?
Today we will sell probably about 120 heads of lettuce. Yeah. Because I brought about 120 and I'll sell out. The nice thing about our hydroponic setup is if it doesn't sell, I can take it back and put it, the roots are still there, I can put it right back in the system. So let it grow for another week.
Deb McKee Kelly of Good Life Farms sells her hydroponic greens at the Bloomington Community Farmers Market on Saturday mornings. Learn more about how they do what they do at goodlifefarms.com. Each week we speak with authors of everything from cookbooks to food history books. Today it's chef-turned-author Kurt Michael Fries. He wrote Chasing Chilies, Hotspots Along the Pepper Trail with Craig Kraft and Gary Paul Nabhan, three gastronauts, as they like to call themselves.
My co-authors know an awful lot about the plants and how they grow and why and where and all that sort of thing, and my job was to deal with them once they were harvested.
They all approached the book with the same passion for chilies, which is a good thing because they tasted some of the hottest peppers in the world.
There are some scientists who think that it's very much like a drug addiction, and there's no doubt that chili peppers do create an endorphin rush, and I think that's what draws people back to it more and more.
But Chasing Chilies gives readers insight into more than just tasting and cooking these fiery foods. Fries and his colleagues spoke with farmers who are struggling to stay afloat, sometimes literally, as climate change wreaks havoc on weather patterns and therefore their yields. Here's 1 minute with Kurt Michael Fries.
Yeah, if there's a real theme to the underlying theme to the book, I think it would have to be resilience. We wanted to talk to the farmers and to the chefs and so on in these various regions to find out how they're reacting to these things, because they're really on the front lines. You know, we see this in the news. They talk about global climate change is coming, and the fact is it's already here, and people are experiencing it every day. So farmers are reacting by changing what they grow in many instances, or no longer growing these peppers at all, or finding them in other places. And it presents farmers who they need to be able to adapt not just to the new climate, but to the new pests that come about. And there's economic impacts as well, because they find themselves growing different stuff, competing with different farmers, and trying to sell to different markets than they did when they started out, or when their father did this, or something like that.
Read my complete interview with Kurt Michael Fries on our website, eartheats.org. A crop-destroying weed monster is methodically climbing up the map from the American South, and it has Midwest farmers readying their arsenals. Palmer amaranth is spreading in Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, and Indiana. Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer traveled to the front lines in Iowa, where farmers are trying to defend their land.
It can decimate a crop. It can withstand many common herbicides. It can cost farmers millions. And Muscatine County, Iowa farmer Roger Hagroffen is staring at it.
So I think it's wanting to produce seeds. I'm leery of it.
I was just going to say, you're not worried about touching that and then dropping it down here?
Well, that's why I left it all idle.
Hagroffen hangs on to that plant he's picked. This is the Iowa front line, one of four farms with confirmed Palmer amaranth. This weed can grow as tall as an NBA player, and one plant might produce a million seeds. After ravaging fields in Arkansas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, farmers hope it won't spread across Iowa's fertile ground. Hagroffen says with a little practice, it's easy to spot.
When you look at Palmer, it looks like a poinsettia versus water hemp or pigweed. After you look at it for a while, you can see the poinsettia shape.
These 6 acres would have been corn this year. Instead, they're mainly growing Palmer amaranth. Last fall, Hagroffen mowed off 3 acres of soybeans after finding the fast-spreading weed, and he added a buffer around those acres this spring. His goals are to contain the Palmer to this area and prevent it from going to seed. But it won't be easy. After mowing the field clean and spraying some herbicide, he's hoping a sorghum cover crop will stymie future weed growth.
And then I'm going to mow the sorghum sedan off, and then I'm going to spray it again. And hopefully that'll take care of this year.
He'll have to wait at least another year before planting. He also plans to walk the end rows of his cornfields searching for rogue palmer that he will handpick. During harvest, he'll blow his combine clean with an air hose before moving it to another field, just in case any Palmer amaranth seed survives to hitch a ride. Beyond the time, it's already costing him the 3 acres of soybeans last year and 6 acres of corn this year. But Iowa State University weed scientist Bob Hartzler says Hargroffen's doing everything right.
He is doing a great job at trying to prevent its spread into other fields and to eradicate it. And that's not something I have seen farmers do in my 30 years here in Iowa. So there is a change in attitude, I think, of farmers.
A realization that industry may not be able to continue offering cheap chemical solutions to weed problems. Just as human diseases can develop antibiotic resistance, plants can become resistant to herbicides like glyphosate or Roundup. That's what we're seeing with Palmer amaranth, and the supply of new options is finite.
Because it is very difficult to find these new chemicals, just like with antibiotics and the super microbes that are causing problems in hospitals.
There's absolutely nothing in the pipeline right now from a new mode of action standpoint that we're going to have here within the next 6 to 8 years.
That's Jason Norsworthy, a weed scientist at the University of Arkansas, who has watched farmers react differently to Palmer amaranth in his state. He says farmers should use 2 or better 3 weapons to fight Palmer amaranth. Proactive farmers have spent up to $85 an acre to succeed. Those who didn't, well,
they went bankrupt as a result of glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth. They essentially lost their crops, and they lost their crops for multiple years, and after a period of doing that, you're no longer farming.
In Missouri, Kansas, and Nebraska, farmers are fighting the same battle and longing for reinforcements. But Norsworthy says those are not likely to be new chemicals.
We're going to have to integrate some pretty wild and radical concepts into how we deal with weeds.
For now, Norsworthy's message to Midwestern farmers is be vigilant and proactive. And that's what Hargroffen is trying to do. We hop in his pickup and he points to other areas where amid dead grasses and other weeds, stands of Palmer amaranth hang on. He understands all too well how things got to this point.
Roundup has us spoiled. That worked. That was a beautiful herbicide.
But beauty can be fleeting, and Palmer amaranth may be offering him a glimpse of farming in a post-Roundup world. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a reporting collaboration focused on issues of food, fuel, and field. Connect with them at harvestpublicmedia.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Kurt Michael Fries, Luann Johnson, Deb McKee Kelly, Liz Leslie, Daniel Orr, Drew Ramsey, Betsy Shepard, and everyone at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, now with 5 locations in Bloomington. Blooming Foods has supported locally produced food and artisanal goods since 1976. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, 1 block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness Massage and Yoga, 812-337-3529 or 33RELAX. And Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, now with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. Stay cool till next week. For Earth Eats, I'm Annie Corrigan.